Sangye chutang soki chonam na Jangju bardu dami kyal suchi Dagi jinzo gi piso nangi Ula benche sangye du kaisho. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Until enlightenment, to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents and ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pureness. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapariva Ratnamanda Buddha Mega Samudra Saparama Samaya. Welcome. So we're at a turning point in our adventure through this text, because we've finished the first vision, and we're about to start the vision of experience. So just to recap kind of where we've come from, Beautiful Ornament of the Three Visions by Norchin Quinchuk Kulundro. Exoteric teachings of the Lamrim lineage. Started with two preliminaries. Anybody remember what the two preliminaries were? We just did one of them.
Oh, aspirations, prayers?
Yeah, what do we call those though?
Refuge.
Refuge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And what was the other preliminary? George Michael sang a song with that title. Gotta have faith.
Faith.
So refuge and faith are our foundations that we're building our tall tower on top of. Yeah. And we went through renunciation. We went through precious human rebirth. We went through karma. Lots of good things. And we developed aspirations. But now we're going to develop noble aspirations. So we're on page 112, instructions on the vision of experience to produce noble aspirations. Now we're going to kind of shift gears a little bit in this section. There'll be a lot fewer lists. And we're going to go into quite a bit of detail about how to do analytical meditation. And when I mentioned this earlier on, a lot of people weren't that familiar with it and hadn't necessarily done a lot of it, but it's a very important part of this section, and we're going to be taught how to do it, and we're going to be led through a series of meditations which will lead us hopefully through a very dramatic transformation. The idea being that self-cherishing is the source of all problems, and loving-kindness or altruism is the solution. So we're going to go through stages of loving-kindness, compassion, and then what's called the enlightenment thought, or bodhicitta. And there's going to be a progression that's going to be accomplished through these analytical meditations that we're going to learn now. So I'm kind of excited because it's a completely different section of the text, which is very important for our spiritual growth. So let's start reading on page 112.
Could you tell us what noble means, please?
We're going to find out all these definitions here very quickly. I think that's one of them. Would somebody like to start off reading?
Okay, I will. This vision of experience is indicated in the Root Treatise, where it says, "For the meditator with transic absorption is the vision of experience." There are two subjects that ascertain its meaning. A. Meditate until the common experience arises in one's mind stream. And then B. Meditate happiness at this time, thinking, "I will gain an extraordinary experience in the Vajrayana path."
Okay, so what is this text they're calling the Root Treatise? What is that? Who wrote it?
Vajuna? What? No, I can't remember the name properly.
Virupa. Yeah, Virupa. That's Virupa's pithy text, very short. Commonly called the Vajra Verses, but the actual title is the Root Treatise of the Vajra Verses. It's only 12 of these little pitcha pages. It's very concise, almost impossible to understand without an explanationary commentary. But this is a quotation from it: "For the meditator with transic absorption is the vision of experience." And so we're going to find out about what these words are, common experience. And the second part, "By meditate happiness at this time, thinking I will gain an extraordinary experience in the Vajrayana path." So what is the Vajrayana path in terms of the Lamdre? How does that connect to this text when he says Vajrayana path?
This is the preliminary for that path?
Exactly. This is the preliminary. This is the foundation. This is what we need before we go on to that, so we don't get confused, because the Vajrayana path is down the road, and it's got some parts to it that we need to understand correctly so we don't get confused. But it's a kind of a hint. The sentence is kind of a hint of what we're going to see in the pure vision section, which is the third section of this text. So it's a kind of a foreshadowing, I guess you could say.
So what's meant by transic absorption?
We're going to find out right now.
Okay.
Right now.
All right.
Okay.
So meditate until the common experience arises in one's mind stream. For the common practitioner with the common transic absorption is the vision of the common experience. The common practitioner is a person who practices the perfections and the common path. The common transic absorption consists of loving kindness, compassion, and the enlightened thought. The vision of common experience is the practice which generates pure and uncontrived wish to selfishly undertake the benefit and happiness of sentient beings throughout space. The method to gain such a wish is, 1, to meditate on loving kindness, which is the desire to benefit other beings. 2, to meditate on compassion, which is the desire to destroy the suffering of others. And 3, to meditate on the thought of enlightenment, which is the desire to gain Buddhahood for the sake of others.
Okay, so there are some definitions here to explain some of this terminology. And I thought, Stephen, noble was in here, but it's not. So I'm just going to guess that they're referring to enlightenment thought, bodhicitta. That's my guess. Noble aspiration.
That makes sense.
And happiness, please. Define. On the last, under B, at the preamble, it says meditate happiness. At this time, thinking, I will gain an extraordinary experience in the Vajrayana. What is happiness? What is the definition of that?
He doesn't give one.
Would that be an aspiration, though? You're aspiring to that?
He doesn't give the definition. My personal opinion would be he's saying, be happy because there's some really good stuff coming.
Right. Well, I understand, but I want to know what happy is. We don't know.
I don't think he says here anyway. Maybe we'll find out as we go. The common practitioner is a person who practices the perfections in the common path. So that perhaps needs some explanation. So the perfections, you see it's capitalized. So that refers to the six perfections. Generosity, morality, patience, joyous enthusiasm, meditative concentration, and wisdom. And the common path, in this case, because sometimes it has different meanings, but in this case, when you get into the Mahayana division of Buddhism, there's actually two subdivisions, the path of the perfections, also known as Sutrayana, and the Vajrayana, or the diamond path. So the perfections are common to both of those Mahayana paths. This is not to be confused with the foundation path. We have these two divisions, you know, foundation path and then Mahayana path, and then the Mahayana is subdivided into two, and the foundation path is subdivided into two. So if I had a whiteboard, I could diagram all this, but anyway, that's what it means here in this context, I believe. A vision of common experience is the practice which generates a pure and uncontrived wish to selflessly undertake the benefit and happiness of sentient beings throughout space. In other words, the Bodhisattva vow. Okay? Anything else we need to say along about this paragraph? Okay. So, loving kindness, the desire to benefit other beings. So that previous paragraph gave us kind of an outline overview of what's going to be the next many, many pages. We're starting off with loving kindness, the desire to benefit other beings. Or in other words, that we want others to be happy. That's a kind of simple way of saying it. Happy.
Even though we don't know
what Even though we don't know what happiness is, but we want it anyway. Okay.
Oh, do you? Would you tell us then?
Yeah, happiness is when you've cleared all the obscurations out of your mind and you have great happiness and joy as a result of that.
You're using the word in the definition. You can't do that.
Well, you're clearing the obscurations. It's the whole point of Buddhism is to clear the mind of all the obscurations and get it to its pure state, and that is lasting happiness, my understanding of it.
Okay, I'll read a little bit here. Okay. One may ask, well then, since the nature of worldly existence is suffering, if, having discarded it, one gains the nirvana of the Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas, whose body is without substratum, which is a state where there is no suffering, like a fire that has exhausted its fuel, then shouldn't we strive to gain such a state? It is not like that. From beginningless time, one has been disregarding all sentient beings who have been one's kind mother by striving to gain happiness of liberation for oneself alone. This is like a mother being carried away by a river while her son happily remains indifferent on the dry bank, though he has the means to rescue her. To being ignorant of kindness, one would be ashamed and one would become the laughingstock of others. So this is actually this subdivision that I just mentioned just a minute ago, the Shravakas, which are the hearers, I believe is an English rendering of that, and the Pratyeka Buddhas are the solitary realizers. These are two of the subdivisions of the foundation path. So in the foundation path, they don't have this bodhicitta thought of benefiting others, that being the main motivation. Their main motivation is to get out of samsara and attain liberation. And while that's a valid path, the Buddha taught it for certain beings, from the point of view of this text, which is a Mahayana text, that's not where we want to be focusing. We want to be focusing on loving kindness and desiring to benefit other beings. And there's a quote from the letter for training. Kinsmen caught in the ocean of worldly existence appear like falling into a whirlpool, but one fails to recognize them because of the change of birth and death. Having left them behind, if one strives to save oneself, then wouldn't this be most shameful? A son or daughter, no matter how wicked, here would not enjoy discarding their mother sentient beings who lovingly breastfed them while being helpless on their laps, and who reared them with great love and many hardships. And also, Jetson Dr. Galtson said in a song, "There is no benefit in liberating myself alone, since beings of the three worlds are my parents. Leaving such parents in the midst of suffering and desiring happiness only for myself is shameful." Somebody else like to continue reading?
"It may then be asked, even though that be the case, since love for oneself is greater than that for others, since one's life is short and the hour of death is uncertain, and since the opportunity to obtain a human body endowed with the prerequisites is very rare, wouldn't it be reasonable to strive for the method of self-liberation from this world? But it is not like that. The enlightenment of the Sravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas is incomplete because it fails to accomplish the perfect quality of realization and abandonment for the purpose of self, and lacks the vast activities that benefit the purpose of others. It is like bad workmanship that is hard to correct, and ultimately it will take a long time to gain Buddhahood. Therefore, it is not an object for which intelligent persons should strive. Furthermore, having discarded the opportunity to obtain the excellent essence of supreme enlightenment, based on the body endowed with the prerequisites, those who strive for inferior liberation would be counted among the great fools. Though one may think that it is difficult to practice the Mahayana path, it is just the same with the Hinayana. It is not hard to practice the Mahayana path because the vehicle in which one travels and the path are very comfortable and easy. All sentient beings are friends who assist one to practice the path, because sentient beings who are without happiness are friends on whom to practice loving kindness. Sentient beings who are suffering are friends on whom to practice compassion. Sentient beings who are poor are friends on whom to practice giving. And sentient beings who harm one are friends on whom to practice patience. Therefore, just as the Buddhas are the indicators of the path, so sentient beings are the friends who help in the practice of enlightenment. Hence, one should treat sentient beings with great respect, just like one treats the Buddhas. As Shantideva said, inasmuch as qualities of Buddhahood are obtained from sentient beings and the conquerors alike, so whose system is that? Is this that maintains devotion to the Buddhas and not towards sentient beings? For these reasons, one should love sentient beings like a mother loves her children, and one should diligently practice loving-kindness meditation from the bottom of one's heart with the desire that all sentient beings gain happiness. The benefits of meditating on loving-kindness are that one accumulates greater merit by meditating on loving-kindness for sentient beings for a moment than by taking a daily offering of 1 trillion Buddha fields filled with offerings to the Buddha. As it was said in the Kandradipa Sutra, there is no match in the quantity and percentage of merit gain between offering inconceivable offerings that fill 1 trillion Buddha fields offered daily to the excellent beings and a thought of love."
So that's a pretty dramatic statement, if you really think about it. Outrageous. What do you mean, outrageous?
It just seems like it's incomparable that such an act with your ordinary beings can be comparable to the act in the presence of a Buddha.
Yeah. One way of looking at that is that when you make an offering, you're practicing generosity, and the karmic result of generosity is abundance, which is needed for your practice, but it's still a relatively worldly result in a sense. Whereas love is, loving kindness is, according to this, it has a spiritual result, which is enlightenment. So there is a kind of gap between those two. Even though they're both meritorious actions, it's a big gap between the result, the karmic result. That's one way of looking at it.
I also kind of understand it in other sentient beings are our teachers. We rely on them to attain enlightenment. So showing, giving that act of love is out of respect that they actually are the ones who will help us along our path.
In fact, there is no enlightenment without sentient
beings.
That's right. It's impossible.
So they're pretty critical to the equation.
Yeah. Okay. Do you feel like continuing, or do you want to pass the...
pass a bit.
Stephen, do you feel like reading?
Yeah. So it starts with the reason.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for this is that if one harms or helps a being, one is harming or helping the Buddha. Sentient beings are possessed by the Buddha. And sentient beings naturally possess the essence of Buddha. As it was said in the Chodjo, the sages are joyful by the happiness of those beings, and they are displeased if harm is done to beings. Through the happiness of those beings, all of the sages are gladdened, and harm done to them is harm done to the sages. Even though throngs of beings may kick my head or even kill me, I shall not respond. May the Lord of the world rejoice. The compassionate ones have made all these beings their own. Of this there is no doubt. These very ones who are seen in the disguise of beings are by their very nature the Lord Buddha. Why then do I not honor them?
All beings have Buddha nature. That's what strikes me in all this. Not so much that I'm going to make the Buddha unhappy, because Buddhas never get unhappy, but a sentient being has Buddha nature, and so by that alone they are worthy of loving kindness. You know, that our vision needs to be clearer than just, oh, that's a bird, that's a person, that's an insect, but that's an actual being that has Buddha nature. And that in itself is really what jumps out to me in this section.
Well, and that's why we accumulate negative karma when we harm other sentient beings. Otherwise we wouldn't accumulate negative karma, right?
And also by conditioning ourselves to see or to believe, to have confidence that what is before us is a Buddha, could very well eventually lead us to see the Buddha. I mean, you can't see it if you aren't looking for it.
Yeah. And also, we have Buddha nature. Mm-hmm. This goes, we talked one time about low self-esteem, about being a form of laziness in a spiritual sense. You know, we need to also recognize that we have Buddha nature too. It sounds kind of obvious, but I was at a teaching one time and the teacher said, who among you would dare to become enlightened in this very lifetime? It's kind of a dramatic statement, that it always seems like it's, someday, but really we have it already, it's just covered up. We need to kind of get that, at least I do anyway, a little clearer. Yeah, this is a reminder of that.
Mm-hmm. It's all about.
Okay, where are we here?
The nature of loving kindness.
Do you want to keep going? Mm-hmm.
The nature of loving kindness is as follows. One's perception is directed toward the objects, sentient beings, through the manner of desiring that they be possessed of happiness and the causes of happiness. As it was said by the Acharya Chandrakirti, one who engages in work for the welfare of living beings is called greatly compassionate.
Okay, so this is in the structure of this text. This is the beginning teaching. Now we're going to have instruction on, okay, now how do we actually meditate on this? How do we do it? This is the practical section starting in the next paragraph here.
To meditate on loving kindness, one should begin by meditating on loving kindness for one's own relatives, because it is easier to produce loving kindness towards them. In the middle, one should meditate on loving kindness for one's enemies, because it is more difficult to generate it towards them. Finally, one should meditate on loving kindness to all sentient beings. First, one should meditate on A, loving kindness for one's mother. Then one should B, merge that meditation with other relatives. And finally, one should C, merge that meditation with ordinary being. Loving kindness for one's mother. To meditate upon one's mother, one should, one, think of one's mother, two, think of her kindness, and three, think of the need to repay her kindness. One, think of one's mother, regardless whether this life's mother is alive or dead. One should generate the thought in one's mind about one's mother's appearance, such as her face, complexion, and the like, just as she is or was, while remembering the manner in which she loved and cherished one. One should intensely think, this is my kind mother.
So I just want to point out again that we are now in analytical meditation, and this is actually discursive thinking. A lot of people have this idea that meditation means no thinking. I remember when I lived in Italy, I had a lot of people asking me to teach them meditation. They'd say things like, oh, I tried that meditation thing. I can't stop thinking. It's not for me. Because they have this idea that meditating is not thinking, which is not true. In this case, this analytical meditation uses thinking. And it says, it uses the word, you know, generate the thought. And think, this is my kind mother. So now we're going into an actual how-to in analytical meditation.
Two, think of her kindness. A, think of her kindness in giving one's body and life. B, think of her kindness in giving instructions of acceptance and rejection. And C, think of her kindness in bearing hardship in order to bring one up. A, think of her kindness in giving one's body and life. Concerning the gift of one's body, one should think, this mother held me for 9 full months in her womb. She relied upon food and conduct that would be beneficial for her. She avoided food.
Beneficial for me.
Excuse me, for me. She avoided food and conduct that would have been harmful to me. Thus she produced this body of mine, endowed with the prerequisites. So this mother is of great kindness to me. To think of her kindness in giving one life, one should think, having been born, my body was incapable of helping myself. My voice was incapable of communicating. My mind was incapable of differentiating between what to reject and accept. So I was helpless like a worm. In such a state, my mother did not let me die, but cherished me with a very loving mind, looked upon me with loving eyes, called me by sweet names, and gathered me up with her 5 fingers. Food was given from her mouth. She cleaned my dirt with her hands, warmed me with the warmth of her body, fed me with sweet milk, protected me from fire, water, and cliffs, and guarded me from the harms of heat and cold. She could not bear to be separated from me, even for a moment, and she nursed me with a love as great as that with which she would take care of her heart if it were to fall out.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
That's a lot of reading. Okay, B, think of her kindness in giving instructions of acceptance and rejection. One should think, when I was completely ignorant, she taught me the way to eat and drink, the way to walk and sit, and the way to communicate. She introduced me to all the names and labels of big and small entities. So my mother was very kind in teaching me inconceivable objects of acceptance and rejection. C, think of her kindness in bearing hardships in order to bring one up. one should think. Without regard for her own health and welfare, my mother always worried that I might get sick, die, or not be equal to other children. In regard to this, she did more than one could describe, such as seeking predictions, consulting astrology, calling doctors, performing rituals, and the like. And in order to take care of me, she had no leisure time during the day, no sleep at night, and she worked so hard that her hands and feet cracked. Considering the food and wealth she had, too dear to be enjoyed by herself, too dear to give to others, too dear to spend on herself in this life, too dear to spend for her next life, she spent for my sake without the slightest regret. Moreover, she considered this a great accomplishment of her wishes. Had she the right to offer me the emperorship of a universal kingdom, she wouldn't have thought it to be very great. She always worried about my well-being. I was the only object of her thought and meditation. She's the kind mother who took greater care of me than of herself. Not only that, but in this world of sentient beings, it's difficult to hear even the name of the Triple Gem. Beyond that, if one practices the Holy Dharma, one will have physical happiness in this life, mental happiness in the intermediate state, a pleasant path in the next life, and will go from happiness to happiness in every lifetime. That I have such an opportunity is due only to this mother's kindness. So there's an objection sometimes that people make if they have not had a good experience with their mother. Perhaps their mother abandoned them or was abusive or something. So what would you say to somebody's objection like that?
She gave you life.
Okay, she gave you life, which is
pretty
precious. Precious human rebirth. What else could we say? If they want to do this meditation, what would they do? What could they do? Perhaps think of someone else who filled that role in some way or another. Maybe an adoptive parent, or maybe a relative, or you know,
a teacher,
or somebody who showed you great kindness.
Right.
You substitute them and you have that as your object. Also think, not only in this life, but since beginning this time until now, she's been my mother again and again. Each time, the way she nourished me with this type of kindness is incommensurable. Countless times, she was born in a poor family and nourished me with food and clothing by begging from others. Countless times, she was born as a fisherman or hunter and fed me with food obtained sinfully. Countless times she was born as an animal and gave up her life through protecting me from harm. If I were to collect all the milk that I have drunk from her breast, it would equal the outer ocean. Countless times she has also been my father and has provided food, clothing, wealth, and the like. She has also been born as my close and distant relatives and has showed mutual, inseparable, heartfelt love. Were I to collect all the tears she has shed for me, they would equal the outer ocean. Even if I narrated for eons how she had been kind and helpful, I would not be able to recount it all. Even if I filled the whole world with gold and gave it to her, still, it would not be enough to repay my debt of her kindness. As it was said in a sutra, even the water of the four oceans is not equal to the quantity of milk I have drunk from someone who has been my mother countless times. Even the gifts of horses and elephants I have received from someone who has been my father countless times would exceed the height of the world of Brahma. Other living beings have also been like that. Would somebody like to read number three for us?
Think of the need to repay her kindness. One should think, if I don't repay the kindness of this mother to whom I owe an inconceivable debt of gratitude, then wouldn't I be the most wicked person? I shall try my best to repay her kindness by kindness and her benefit by benefit. What would be most beneficial for her? She would be most benefited if she were endowed with happiness and the cause of happiness, of which right now she is lacking. therefore, how wonderful it would be if my mother were endowed with happiness and the cause of happiness. Thus generate such a thought which is associated with a wish. Further, one should think, I will make her gain that condition of happiness and the cause of happiness. Thus generate such a thought which is associated with enlightenment thought. Again, one should think, may it happen like that, that is, that she be endowed with happiness and the cause of happiness. Thus generate such a thought which is associated with a prayer. One should meditate upon whichever of these three is more agreeable to one's mind.
Okay, so we've been given three possibilities here for this meditation, how it can proceed at this point. And you get to choose whatever you find more agreeable to your mind.
Finally, one should think, I don't have the power to make my mother happy and enable her to have the cause of happiness. Who has such power? Only the preceptor and the triple gem have such power. Just as a crippled mother whose son is being carried away by water yells for help from others, so one should meditate and pray. May the preceptor and triple gem see to it that my mother has happiness and the cause of happiness. Through practicing in this way, one will be able to generate genuine and natural love for one's mother.
Okay. Lorna, you want to continue, please?
Sure. Merge that meditation with other relatives. One should bring to mind by stages other relatives who have been most kind to oneself, such as one's father and so on. One should recollect each of their kindnesses. They have manifested kindness in this life through taking care of me in ways like this and like that. In many lifetimes, they have been my parents and have been helpful in protecting me from harm. Therefore, they were very kind to me. To think of the need to repay their kindness, one should apply the same thoughts as those applied to one's mind and meditate until one gains a love for them that is undifferentiated from the love one has for one's real mother.
I just remembered a teaching on this topic, going back to our mothers, and the teacher asked everybody in the room to go around and think about their mother and think about something extraordinary that their mother had done for them, you know, out of kindness. And so I was thinking that there was a whole bunch of kids in my family. I was thinking my mother didn't have a new winter coat for 15 years so that we could all have winter coats every few years as we grew, and she was last on the list. We were first. So it's an interesting, I don't want to call it an exercise, it's actually part of the meditation, is to actually think, well, you know, what did she do besides giving me life? She did this and this and this. So if you're doing this on your own, you might want to think about doing that.
Merge that meditation with ordinary beings. Merging the meditation on loving kindness for one's mother and other relatives with the meditation on loving kindness for ordinary beings has three parts. One, meditating on neighbors and the like. Two, meditating on one's enemies. And three, meditating on all sentient beings. One, meditate on neighbors and the like. One should bring to mind neighbors and others with whom one has a relation of food and wealth and think, in this life they have benefited me like this, and indirectly they have been my parents many times in my previous lives. Thus apply one's thoughts to them as previously done to one's mother, and meditate. Two, meditate on one's enemies. The way to extend the meditation on loving kindness to one's enemies is to bring to mind those who have caused one harm. The object of one's hatred, such as enemies, evil spirits, and the like, and think, this enemy has been my mother many times in previous lives, and each time she has been of benefit to me and protected me from harms. Although this enemy has been very kind in the past, I failed to repay his kindness by kindness and his benefit by benefit. Therefore, I perceive these beings who pressure me to repay the debts of previous lives as enemies and ghosts, just as debtor perceives his creditors to be abusive when being pressured to repay his debts. Since both our minds are obscured by karma, the afflictions, and the change of birth and death, we don't recognize each other, but see each other as the doer of harm and the recipient of harm. Our minds are deluded in this way. Though we are actually very close relatives, we are without free will and harm each other. For this reason, the gap created between us has become wider and wider. As the Lord of the Yogis, Virupa, said, though these harmers were my beloved mothers and benefited me again and again many times in my past lives, now, like one who is mad, without free will, they perform deeds of non-virtue by which they will be born in the ceaseless hells. One should think, therefore, not only has this enemy benefited me many times in my past lives, but even now he is helping me through destroying my pride and encouraging me to practice the Dharma at this time, when my mind is fully polluted with pride and false assumptions, and my behavior wild, unreligious, and the like. He has been very kind in benefiting me in many different ways. Without mere pretense, one should feel this from the bottom of one's heart. One should meditate on the mind that produces the desire to repay kindness, and so on, as explained earlier. As it was said in a scripture, whoever perceives objects that produce the afflictions, whether they be friends or enemies, as spiritual friends, will be happy wherever one may abide. If, even though one meditates like this, one fails to produce loving kindness, but repeatedly produces anger and desire to harm the enemy, then one should recollect the results of the fault of hatred, as already explained in the section on cause and effect. Thus one should think, if I can't subdue my hatred, then even though I may have subdued the outer enemy sent once, I will not have the chance to do so again. If I could subdue hatred itself, then all the outer enemies would disappear. As it was said by Shantideva, I cannot kill all the wicked beings who are like the sky, yet if I slay only this thought of anger, all those forces are destroyed. How can enough leather be obtained to cover the surface of this land? Yet by simply covering the soles of shoes with leather, all these lands are as if covered.
So that's a famous quote from Shantideva. But here again, we're given two possibilities in this type of meditation. If we're at the point where we're meditating about our enemies and extending loving kindness to them, if that's too big of a jump, then there's this other possibility, which is to shift to recollecting the faults of hatred. And we went through that previously about where that leads you, karmically speaking, and it's not a place to go. So it's not like we necessarily have to make the big jump right in one, right at the very beginning, right off the bat. If that's too much for you, you can do this other step first, and then you can go back and do the meditating kindness for your enemies. If you think about it, if somebody harms you, whose fault is that?
Your fault.
How?
Because you probably harmed them in some other previous life.
Probably?
You harmed them.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And not only that, they're creating bad karma again for them, and you're getting rid of the karmic debt. So that's kind of a double whammy for them. That.
And so that then is an opportunity to have compassion for them because they're creating negative karma for them. Cells.
Yeah, it's an opportunity for a lot of things.
Patience.
Patience, the negative results of hatred and anger, karmic debt, this whole idea of karmic debt, and what's really the cause of something that's happening to me. Somebody's harming me. Who's really causing that? There's a lot to meditate on this particular section. Maybe I'll read. One should recollect the meaning of verses such as these. Number three, meditate on all sentient beings. To extend loving kindness to all sentient beings, remember that, as it was said in the Bhadrakarya, I don't know the English for that, as far as the limit of space, so is the limit of sentient beings. Thus think, since space has no limit, so sentient beings are limitless. Even among the countless sentient beings, there is not a single sentient being who hasn't once become my mother. They've all been my parents on many occasions, and each time they have been extremely kind by protecting me from harm. Still, I cannot recognize that they were my parents because my mind is obscured by karma, the afflictions, and the change of birth and death. Right now, my indifference toward them is not good, so I should repay these kind beings' kindness by kindness, and their benefit by benefit, as much as I can. What would be most beneficial to these mother sentient beings? One should meditate and apply the same procedure as for one's present mother. If it is difficult to produce loving kindness to all sentient beings at one time, then one should think first of hell beings and then, by stages, of all the other beings of the six realms. One should think, my wish would be accomplished were each sentient being to be endowed with happiness in the cause of happiness. Thus meditate along with a wish, the enlightenment thought, and a prayer. Having meditated in this way, one should produce an uncontrived desire to benefit sentient beings who pervade space, and one's meditation of loving kindness has been accomplished. As it was said in the Sutra Lankara, just as parents love their only child, so bodhisattvas who greatly love sentient beings from the bottom of their hearts always desire to benefit them. So that's the meditation that's laid out. And again, there's an option for two steps if you want to break it down into steps. If you want to go through the various realms, you can go through in that way. If it's too much for you to, you know, meditate on all sentient beings, which are limitless. And now we get into the part where it's reflecting. So to reflect on the meaning of this, bring one's mother to mind and think, alas, this is my mother who has been very kind and dear to me. First she gave me this beloved body, then she gave me dear life, and lastly she gave me her precious wealth without regret. She enlightened me regarding rejection and acceptance when I was completely ignorant. She made me hear what I had not heard. She made me understand what I had not understood. She made me acquire things I did not have. She made me equal to others when I was not. She matched me with others to whom I was not matched. Thus one should recollect all the things that are explained above. Moreover, if anyone has any other kind of example, then consider it and think. Thus, she is my kind mother. I would add, she made me brush my teeth when I was a little kid and I didn't want to. You're not going to bed.
I know you're going to need those teeth.
Okay. Who else wants to read now?
One should think from the depths of one's heart. In brief, it is due only to the kindness of this beloved mother that I could ever become a fully enlightened Buddha, should I practice. Not only that, but she has been my mother many times in my past lives. Each time, like my present mother, she was very kind by protecting me from harm and benefiting me. If I couldn't repay her kindness with greater kindness, there would be no one more vile than me. I need to repay her kindness, and her benefit by benefit. What would be most beneficial to my mother? Temporarily, she would be benefited by a healthy body and mind, and for a long term, she would be benefited were she endowed with virtue, the cause of happiness. However, right now, she is without happiness and is moving in the opposite direction of the cause of happiness. How greatly I wish that she might be temporarily healthy and happy and endowed with virtue, the cause of happiness, for the long term. Thus one should meditate on this along with a wish, the enlightenment thought, and a prayer, and merge it with whichever of these three is strongest.
So when they say an enlightenment thought, what exactly do they mean there?
The wish that all living beings become Buddhas.
Yeah, and I'm going to cause it. I'm going to take personal responsibility, me alone. That's my job. That's what it really means.
And you can't do that.
Not yet.
Unless you were able.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's a tricky little path. It's very elegant, really.
Yeah. So when they say enlightenment thought, let's remember that's what it means.
Finally, one should pray as if words of lamentation are being drawn from one's heart. Although I need to place my mother in the state of happiness and provide her with the cause of happiness, I do not have the power to do so. Therefore, may the preceptor in the Triple Gems see to it that she obtains happiness and the cause of happiness. Until weariness reaches to the bones and flesh, meditate. Were it that my kind mother be happy, blissful, endowed with an abundance of resources, and engaged in the conduct of virtuous actions, if one gains an experience of practice, then one should not prevent the flow of this experience.
Yeah, I think this is worth just noting here, where it says, until weariness reaches to the bones and flesh, and if one gains an experience of practice, then one should not prevent the flow of this experience. You know, sometimes Buddhism has this reputation of being kind of cold, you know, kind of unemotional, yeah, stoic, stone Buddha, you know. But actually, teachers will say when you do this meditation, you know, that tears will arise and goosebumps will arise on your skin, that you actually feel it. It's not a cold experience of being cut off from your feelings at all. It's something that you want to feel. You want to feel this experience. One should not prevent the flow of this experience.
Similarly, bringing to mind the kindness of one's father, one should think, this is my kind father. Other than not holding me in his stomach and feeding me with his breast, he has been as kind to me as my mother. There wasn't even a slight difference between him and my mother in the way he brought me up. He has been my parent countless times in previous lifetimes. Each of those lifetimes, he has been kind and helpful by giving me as much happiness and welfare as my present father. Thus, one should meditate and as explained above. Likewise, in regard to other relatives and ordinary beings, think, in this life, they have been kind to me in this way and that way. Also, indirectly, they have been my parents many times in my previous lives. In this way, recollect the kindness and helpfulness that they gave, and then meditate on loving kindness. Likewise, in regard to enemies or ghosts, one should think, many times in my past lives, this enemy or ghost has been my kind parent. Not having repaid his kindness by kindness, and his benefit by benefit, I see him as an enemy or ghost who now only wishes to be repaid the debt I owe him. Presently appearing as enemies, they are helping me to by criticizing my misconduct that goes contrary to the Dharma. Appearing as ghosts, they are helping me by encouraging my three doors, of body, voice, and mind, to perform virtuous actions, directly and indirectly. They have been very kind and helpful in many ways. Thus, one should meditate as described above. If it is difficult to generate loving kindness and one gets angrier, then one should think that the meditation on loving kindness is the only means of gaining enlightenment for oneself. Through meditating on loving kindness, how much benefit can there be for the enemy? One should think, presently I cannot bear even the slightest suffering of body and mind, yet I continue to accumulate karma by which in my future lives I will certainly fall into the abyss of the lower realms from which there is no escape. So, who would be a greater fool among Mahayana practitioners than I? Through harming myself, how can it harm my enemy? I want to repeat that. Through harming myself, how can it harm my enemy? One should thus meditate and feel ashamed of oneself.
There's a saying, getting angry is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. This is another way of saying
this. Yeah. Very good. In that way, one should classify each of the other six realms of and bring them to mind by thinking. Since beginningless time, I have been born again and again in all the higher and lower realms, and have been roaming again and again until there is no place left where I haven't been born. Also, there is no sentient being who hasn't been my mother limitless countless times. Each of those times, she gave me a body, food, wealth, and benefit, and destroyed what was harmful. Even at the hour of parting, she was kind and dear to me. Thus, apply the same meditation as explained above. One should meditate and think until one gains uncontrived love for all sentient beings. In between meditation sessions, one should abandon anger toward any sentient being and should look upon them affectionately, as a loving mother looks upon her cherished son. To those who are endangered through fear, one should give fearlessness and help by saving lives and the like. To those who are destitute and without protection, one should give food, shelter, and the like, and converse with those in a gentle and pleasing tone. For those who are in the realm of animals, one should recite into their ears the names of the Buddhas and mantras. In brief, the root of Mahayana practice is loving kindness. If one is able to produce loving kindness, then it is easy to generate compassion. Therefore, one should be careful and diligent in the meditation of loving kindness. As it was said in a sutra, the water of compassion courses through the channel of loving kindness.
That's the first section, loving kindness. Any observations anybody would like to make at this point? Any of this strike you in any particular way that you want to share?
Well, I would like to say something that I heard Geshe-la say, and it struck me as being central to his teaching and to my own practice. And I was just sort of leading before about happiness with my question to see what the consensus was. His statement was, through his translator, that happiness is the warmth we feel inside. And he moved his hand across his, up and down over his viscera. It's the warmth we feel inside when we look into the smiling face of our mother or someone who's been very kind to us.
Hmm.
As the very root of the Dharma practice.
Hmm.
Because it's that wish that others have that same experience, which is love. Love is that wish that others have that same warmth.
The feeling we have inside when we look in the smiling face of our mother?
The warmth.
The warmth.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you.
Huh?
That's as good a definition as...
I don't see the steam in it anymore.
Yeah. I like that they call it loving kindness and not just love. Especially in English, it just has so many meanings. You know, in Italian, they break it down into different words for different situations, you know, in different contexts. You don't love your mother the same way you love your partner, say, for example, you know. But in English, we don't have that. We just have this word. So by saying loving kindness, it kind of shapes it in a way that's more particular and applicable to what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it removes inanimate objects. You can't have loving kindness toward a pear.
A pear?
Yeah, I mean, people say they love pears.
Oh, yeah. Like, I really, really like it.
A pear can't experience happiness. And what I've heard in teachings is that to love somebody is simply to wish them to happiness.
Yeah.
Wishing happiness. That's the definition.
That's the definition, yeah.
In context.
Yeah.
That they be happy. But yeah, in our culture, I mean, love is grasping and attachment and in love and all that. What can you do for me? And a lot of that kind of stuff. It's very.
Don't you just love that new song I heard on the radio?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just listen to the music.
Yeah, anything really. That's the problem. It's too general, you know.
English is a business language.
It's what?
Language of business.
It is. Okay, well, thank you. Food for thought and meditation. I'm going to stop here because the next section is a new section on compassion, which is the follow-up to loving kindness. So let's conclude there and read our dedication prayer. So nam deyi tam chazi pani dob na ni beda nam banje di ke ga na ji ba lung ju be sit pe tsu le do wa du ar shu jang ju sam cho rin po che ma ke pa nam ke gyur ji ke ma nyam pa ne pa yang gong ne gong tu pel par shu jom pa pa o ji tar ken pa dong kun tu song po de yang de jin de de da kung gi je zu da glu chi ge wa di da tam che rab tu ngu tu su she pi gya wa tam che ki mu wa na ngu jo tu nga pe gi rang shen ge we tsa wa di kun kyang sang po cho chi rab tu tu ma wa di cha tsa wa dang chu ching sha ba dang Jesu yi rong gu jing so wa yi Ye wa chung ze da gi ji sang pa Tao ze zo pe jang ju chi By the Spirit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen. May it never grow and flourish. In whatever way valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues that I might train to be like them. Through this dedication, praise the Supreme, by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching, be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment. Thank you.